Search your killer. Wonderful, isn't it? Pheromone signature left by his body. These are scent molecules. 10 years ago, one of his kind stalked and eliminated an elite special forces crew in Central America. There were two survivors. They indicated that when trapped, the creature activated a self-destruct device that destroyed enough rainforest to cover 300 city blocks. Remarkable weaponry. That's right, Lieutenant. Otherworld life forms.
Huh?
A fucking alien. Iwo Jima, Cambodia, Beirut, drawn by heat and conflict. He's on safari. Lions, the tigers, the bears. Oh my.
Welcome to the Three Men and a Retrospective Podcast. Look at the Predator film series. Join Garrett.
We are a rescue team, not assassins.
Adam.
You son of a bitch.
And Matt.
How'd you snag a ticket on this shitmobile?
As they get themselves to the analysis chopper and review each Predator film not yet covered here at Percolated Media.
So why don't you use the regular army? What do you need us for?
Because some damn fool accused you of being the best.
If you would like to hear the co-host views on the Alien vs. Predator films and Prey, check out our Percolated Media archives as the films were reviewed back in 2022.
This is getting better by the minute.
So stick around, podcast listeners.
Guess who's back?
The Percolated Media Predator Retrospective begins now.
Grab a seat. Enjoy the show. This is history.
The Predator, released September 14th, 2018. Budget on this was $88 million. Box office worldwide was $160.5 million. And this was directed by the one and only Shane Black. Well, we started the year talking about a Shane Black script, and we're going to be close to ending the year with a Shane Black script. Unbelievable that we're going to be talking about The Predator. I got to tell you guys, after he was in Predator in 1987, which we talked about, it was kind of fitting that he would be the one taking the series back on years after Robert Rodriguez produced a middling, to say the least, update with Adrian Brody. But Matt, as the big Black fan on this podcast, what were you thinking when Shane Black was announced as taking on The Predator?
As I alluded to at the conclusion of last week's show, I thought this was the equivalent of getting Ridley Scott back to reboot Alien with Prometheus, where, you know, you're getting one of the original people associated because John McTiernan wasn't exactly in a situation to direct this, and nobody would have been happy about Rennie Harlan being announced as the director if you look at his career. So I feel like getting Shane Black was kind of a way to maybe settle down the fan base, especially the people who didn't like any of the movies beyond the first one, saying, hey, we're getting someone back who has ties to the first one, but has also gone on to have a very extensive career, both with writing. And this wasn't his, unlike, say, Rennie Harlan or some of the other directors they've kind of plucked, like, you know, David Fincher doing Alien 3. He had actually made a couple movies as a director before this, both on his own merit and with Marvel. So he had the experience to kind of get an endorsement on that regard. But me personally, outside of Shane Black helming this, I did not care.
Now, Adam, as the massive Predator fan on this podcast, what were you thinking when Shane Black, a.k.a. Hawkins from the first film, was here to take this project on as a writer and director? Co-writer.
To me, it felt like, as a writer, I was like, okay, that's kind of cool. Because I'd like quite a few films of his that he's written or co-written or touched up or doctored. Like, I enjoy that. As a director, I didn't care. There's only one other movie in his filmography. I mean, it's not like it's thick. He's done, what, four movies, technically?
As a director, yeah, just four.
Yeah, so it's not like everybody's like, oh, he's such a great director. Dude, he's done a few movies. Chill out. And most of that, he's only brought on board because his friends want to party and have a dude that's going to let them do so. So as a director, I didn't care. We'll discuss Iron Man 3 down the road, but believe me, I didn't care as a director. As a writer, okay. I thought he was going to bring something to the script that shows he actually cared, because that's where it really kicked off for him, you know? So I was excited on that end. But it's, I mean, to this day, And it's, you know, I've never seen Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I've never seen his other one.
Nice Guys. You haven't seen The Nice Guys either.
I don't have that Shane Black directing love that I know some people do.
Yeah, outside of his late 80s, early 90s, sheer output of action extravaganzas, and the three of us did talk about Lethal Weapon. Yeah, I'm the same way as Adam. I was not leaning one way or the other with this. You know, it's a lot like, to me, like how Trent Reznor, you know, once he became a family man, I thought his music kind of took a downward turn. Once Shane Black stopped being the wunderkind and not having a script sell for $3.5 million and him doing most of it off a mirror, I didn't really care about what he was doing. And Iron Man 3, look, we are going to get to that eventually, and I know I have two opposite ends of the spectrum on this. I am right in the center of that spectrum. I have not rewatched it probably in about 10 years, so when we get to that, that'll be a very interesting show, but that did nothing to sway me. I was just, okay, bring him back. I like the association with the franchise. Let's see what he can do.
Well, they also, like, Iron Man 3, that movie would have been successful regardless of who directed it, because it was the first one after the Avengers.
Yep.
It was sold on Downey Jr.'s lead in Iron Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it was also sold on... Black was kind of one of the last directors that Marvel actually hired who has a very distinctive style. More so as a writer versus director, but at least you could say with that movie, it's a Shane Black movie as much as it is a Marvel movie, which you cannot say about almost anything they've done in the last...
nothing since.
Seven fucking years. And, you know, it is kind of the last Jedi of the MCU where you can't say he didn't take big swings.
Well, we'll get to that eventually. Right now, let's talk about the Predator. Shane Black brought in his buddy, Fred Dekker. Matt, you and I have talked about Fred Dekker in the past.
Yeah, fucking RoboCop 3.
RoboCop 3 was his. And I
mean, we kind of did with Lethal Weapon 4. He's uncredited on it.
Yeah, but he's uncredited on that one as well. They wrote this script, and there was some excitement swirling around it. And Matt, I think you hit it right on the head for me as well. I think one of the reasons Shane Black was hired to do this is to kind of calm down that fan base. It's like, okay, Robert Rodriguez took a swing. He didn't really set us on fire. Let's get somebody to actually bring us back to that first film and the feeling we had with that first film. And who better to do it than a guy associated with it? Everything was feeling good. And then it was announced that Benicio del Toro was taking the lead. Okay, that's cool. Jake Busey is going to come on to play Keyes, the son of Gary Busey's character in Predator 2. That's cool. And then the rumors started swirling. The first one being that the final act of this film was completely reshot. And that got people thinking, okay, what's going on here? And then the release date got moved around about four times. We'll talk about the other controversy associated with this in a bit, but Matt, did that give you any hesitation? Like, oh God, we're going to go right back to middling Predator?
Oh, this set my alarm, like my smoke detectors were going off, that this was... It's appropriate that this was produced by Fox, because this had, like, studio meddling written all over it.
Yeah.
With that, and my logic was, okay, why are you getting... You know, part of the appeal of getting Shane Black is that he's very much his own guy. And you're tampering with him already. I was getting very concerned. I mean, granted, I had no expectations for this outside of him piquing my curiosity, but that combined with the fact it was Fox, combined with the fact that this property to me has not worn its stripes beyond the first movie. But my rationale was also, okay, after AVP, you sort of had nowhere to go but up. And Predators was middling, but at least it was an ample try. You know, they got up to base and took some swings from the pitcher, but I was not getting good vibes about this at all.
Yeah. And then in the midst of that too, they also announced that Benicio del Toro was off and Boyd Holbrook was taking over as the lead.
Which is also stupid, because I'm like, okay, Benicio del Toro, very well respected actor. How do you go to Boyd Holbrook? Like, they have nothing in common.
Absolutely zero. You're
right. I guarantee you somebody just watched Logan and said, get that guy, because he was in a movie that was very popular.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently someone at Fox loves the X-Men movies, because you got Boyd Holbrook and Olivia Munn.
Let me tell you.
Who was in X-Men. Apocalypse.
Yeah.
I was at 20th Century Fox when this was getting off the ground and it was filming. And I had left right around the time this was in the midst of filming. And word coming off that set was it was not good. It was not going well. We've talked about that with so many 20th Century Fox films. As they get going, people start stepping in and visions start getting compromised. And that's what I was hearing when I left that studio. And I did not have good high feelings about it at all. Adam, you're hearing the rumors. What are you thinking? Reshot the entire third act. We got a new lead. What's going through your head in the lead up to this?
I felt like we were getting Fan4 stick all over again. I really felt like originally you probably had something that was an idea that was rushed. that you had a script that nobody really read. Because when you look at what, I'll put it out here now, when you look at what got cut out of this film, when you look at the fact that they had to shoot a completed third of the film, they had to reshoot all of that, somebody didn't do their job and read the script. They just didn't. Because that's not a test audience thing. That's a bad writing and bad executive thing. And to me, that's like Fantastic Four, where you get to that point in that movie where you're like, hey, what's everybody upset about? What's the problem with, holy shit, we got there, you know? And that's what Fox tried to do with New Mutants. You look at Fantastic Four, this New Mutants, there's a reason Fox doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And I know there's obviously a lot of other movies at play, but they treated these movies the same way, where they didn't step in till it was too late because they wouldn't do their job on a script and a producer basis.
Well, it's also the thing of, you can clearly tell with all of those movies, there was a clear demarcation line to where the studio took over. Or the, like in the case of Fanforstic, which we'll talk about actually very soon, where Kinberg stepped in to
Go direct. You could almost say, put an intermission, come back, and we'll continue a different movie in every single one of those.
And I think that this production is why Shane Black took such a long break from directing. I mean, hell, I think there's a point where he stops directing this movie and someone else took it over.
I think there's a lot of this he doesn't direct.
I think there's a lot of it he didn't write, to be perfectly honest. Like this was...
Yeah.
This is as troubled a product... Like, this is sort of like... In a lot of ways, it's also like X-Men Apocalypse, where you can tell that they were all excited to get someone back, and then the studio said, oh, no, we gotta do this, we gotta do that, what's this? They tried to course correct way too much. Like, of all the Predator movies, this is far and away the most compromised. And this was also the one with the biggest budget, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, he was coming off of Iron Man 3. And let's not, Iron Man 3 made over a billion. It was like 1.2, 1.3 by the time it was done. Fox needed that kind of money to save the studio. This is right before they get bought, acquired, however you want to look at it. So they really needed that to be done. And I think they were counting on this as a return to that IP that they could, not just from a movie standpoint, but from an entire IP just bleeding that they could count on. And yeah, this is one of the reasons that Fox doesn't exist, sadly.
Well, Fox also stood and delivered because Edward James Olmos had a role in this, and then they ended up cutting his role out as well. So
I was excited to see this film at the beginning of the year and then at the summer. So by the time fall ran around, I just didn't care anymore.
And there were certain things that, like, I thought the supporting cast they assembled interested me. I thought it was an interesting group of people. But the marketing... The
same ones in his new movie.
Yeah, quite a few of them. But the thing that set off alarms again in the marketing was the first trailer sets it up to be much more of like a straightforward sci-fi movie. And then the other trailers where they highlight more of the mercenary team, they're treating it like it's a full-on, like, it feels like a Lethal Weapon movie where it's more of an action comedy. So I was sitting there going, I don't know what this movie is going to be when it actually comes out. And as we'll talk about, it tries to be a lot of things.
Boy. And that there was a lot of people saying that this movie, that it's not a Predator movie, it's freaking, that it's Mac and Me. So yeah, I do think they had a really troubled time deciding what this was.
Now, and I will say, after this came out, Shane Black was quoted as saying, I'm not going to take the road of blaming anyone for a failed movie.
Yep.
I guess he said, I guess we didn't have that finger on the pulse.
Appreciate him for that.
I do, too.
You don't see that a lot.
No.
No, especially for a guy who, he very easily could have said, I did it for the money.
Yeah, a.k.a. Josh Trank on that set. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, can I not wait to get to that, because I was bear witness to all of it. All right, so I'm just going to mention this because it was a part of the lead up to this movie. But in the midst of the filming, this is when Me Too was happening.
Oh, yes.
And Olivia Munn joins this cast. She has a scene with one of Shane Black's friends who she found out is a registered sex offender. And he had been arrested for basically trying to start a relationship with a 15-year-old girl.
Yeah, by
his niece.
By email.
Yeah, by
his
email.
His niece.
Yeah, his niece. Yeah.
His niece. It's not just some random kid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a friend that was, all of this was known by the director. I got to put that out there.
Yeah, he flat out came out and said that. He's like, it was my mistake. I was trying to do a favor for a friend, and it was my mistake to bring him around this set. But Olivia Munn made a pretty big deal about it. That guy's scene got cut. But the fact that guy's scene got cut meant they had to work around it by explaining it in other ways. So, again, it just added to the craziness that was this movie's production.
Matt, it got cut 2 weeks before release.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It is what it is. They handled it how they saw fit. And, you gotta move on. I mean, look, Fox knows how to work with alleged sex offenders.
They sure do. All right, so we open up. We get the 20th Century Fox logo as we go out in space with ships firing at one another. Guys, I was not expecting a Star Wars film in the beginning, but that's what we get here.
Yeah, this was like J.J. Abrams' Star Trek.
I gotta say, I have not seen this movie since theaters, since, Matt, you and I covered it years ago. So I was coming in pretty cold. I had completely forgotten about this dogfight we get in the pre-title sequence here.
Oh, this movie has a lot of dogfights.
Yelp. Nicely done, sir. We see one ship just get steamrolled as another ship with a predator at the controls fires an escape pod. Adam, what do you think about that opening sequence here?
Okay, so I think
this is where I stopped watching the movie.
Shane Black must have rewatched Predator and went, you know how everybody forgets there's a spaceship at the beginning of that film? Just wait. I have seen this film multiple times. Finally completed it because I love you all listening to this, and I still forgot that this is how this film opens. And this is the fifth time I'm watching the beginning of this film, and I forgot this exists. I mean, it's amazing. I didn't know that they had leftover footage from Lost in Space that they were going to use into this film. Because that's how this looks. I'm waiting for Matt LeBlanc to show up behind the controls. Oh my!
That's this Stephen Hopkins. He directed Predator 2.
But it's. I mean, I think it makes it very problematic down the road, because I think keeping this in, I don't think gels up later on, but you at least know that, hey, we got the space guys, they're coming to Earth. One jumps through almost the same technology that the Guardians of the Galaxy are going to use in a couple years, but the second one can't for reasons. But I completely forgot we start by two ships shooting at each other.
You know, Matt brings up a good point. You've tried watching this five times. I guess talk about them as we get to the scenes where you just stop.
I will tell you. Is yep.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And Matt and I both had theatrical experiences because we reviewed it one other time, as I mentioned.
And I'll say I never got a theater watch into this. I think because waiting for this movie so much in 2018, by the time it came out, kids and everything else, I was done caring. If it had come out at its original date, I'm sure I would have seen it.
We move on to a jungle as a rescue mission is happening. Some cars approach, and the one on watch says that he's going to attack. We see a sniper shot as the ship crashes, and the soldier takes quite the tumble. He's on the lookout as he spots the ship's remnants, as well as some green blood. He finds the mask as someone approaches. He's putting the evidence in a bag as the skin body of Haynes drops down. So, here we go, boys. At least we're getting some skin bodies here, right?
Why? So the ships crash, and this person that Predator 1, I'll just call him that for now, crashes his ship somehow. Okay, as the ship's crashing, parts of it are ejecting, parts of it are not. I don't understand that. He's ejecting parts of his armor instead of putting it on. Don't ask me why, other than for plot contrivances. But he crashes, exits his ship, and the first thing he does is string this dude up. What the living hell?
There's a certain part of this movie that feels like Shane Black is standing behind the camera yelling, "Are you happy now?" Like with the stringing the guy up and the armor, like all the callbacks, it feels like he's doing them because it's the expectation, not necessarily because he wants to. Yeah. And also, I can't tell like what parts are his. Some of the characters I can clearly tell he wrote, mm-hmm. versus some of the scenes where it's like the Predator is doing stuff illogically that contradicts how he's acting in the previous movies, which leads me to believe that either Shane Black has not seen the other movies, which I doubt, or the producers or the powers that be are saying, hey, you got to do this, you got to do that. I'm already sitting there going, I can tell for the first 10 minutes this movie was fucked with.
It's evident right off the bat. That was my next note. Shots are fired as we're hearing the Predator sound. This character that we'll know as Quinn, played by Boyd Holbrook, unwittingly splits a body in half as blood drips down. Quinn then makes his escape as he checks his new glove and makes his way to the chopper. All right.
Now, I will give this movie a compliment.
Okay.
Predators, I accused of being kind of sanitized, which was weird for an R-rated movie. I like that this at least feels like a hard R in that 80s type of way for parts of it.
Yeah, Shane Black was out in the press saying, yeah, we made a hard R. We're not fucking with PG-13 with this.
Parts of this do really feel that hard R, almost in a RoboCop, like Verhoeven type of style. And this blood dripping down, for those that haven't, and if we insert it here, then sorry, I'm jumping next week, but they recreate this in Prey, where we get the Predator revealed by blood dripping down to reveal the Predator. So this is a pretty damn cool shot. And you think it's knocked out till those eyes open up. It looks... Okay, the CGI in this is crap.
Yes.
And a lot of that has really got to be because they recut, they reshot, they redid. The lighting, I mean, this thing goes from day to night more than me working the little switch so that I can get some extra trophies in freaking the Harry Potter video game. But this reveal, those eyes open up, badass. Like, that's just cool. That takes me back to some just mid-80s R-rated shit that I should not have seen at 12, 13 years old. So I like that. But throughout this film, damn, the CGI looks bad.
Yeah, I almost would have preferred guys in suits for most of this movie versus CGI predators. This movie, ironically, it came out the same year. This feels as compromised on the writing, directing, and effects level as Solo did.
The weird part was that Shane Black was tweeting pictures of himself next to people in Predator suits saying, "We're doing practicals, guys. We have real Predators on this set." So the fact that you guys are complaining...
I think he wanted to until someone said, "Hey, we have computers that can do this for cheap because we don't want to pay the guys in suits." The inconsistencies also go to the Predator... Which it's also weird this movie's called The Predator, considering there's more than one.
Yeah.
Which is odd. But also, one of the things that frustrates me about this movie, there are parts of it where I feel like the Predator is actually menacing again, which I haven't felt since the first movie. And then there's other parts where he's a Carrot Top level of prop comedian. He might as well be Gallagher smashing watermelons for parts of this movie.
We're hearing the Predator theme as Sterling K. Brown says that they're large, they're fast, and fucking them up is their idea of tourism.
Oh my God, I want to punch Shane Black for his gum fetish. Dude. Wow. Okay, I have a thing. Luckily, it's a medical thing, and I swear I got to get a doctor's sign off. Not everybody needs to chew gum with their fucking mouth open. And if I got to hear you make mouth noises in front of me, it's not going to end well. What is this dude's obsession with? Is it because you can't smoke it? I mean, this is R-rated, so they could have had him smoke. His fascination with making people pop gum. What the? Why? Like, this dude, he must be jacking off to guys chewing gum like Quentin Tarantino does to girls taking off shoes. Fucking A.
Well, I think he had to let it out some other way because they told him, "You cannot make this a Christmas movie." So he said, "All right, I gotta fight." And maybe telling him that's like telling a smoker to quit cold turkey, and he just, his brain short-circuited and he focused on gum. Yeah, that's a weird thing, but also, like, maybe it is a commentary on smoking, because that's not even a hard art. Like, even if you're R, they still don't want to show that nowadays.
Yeah,
going all the way back to 20.
It guarantees an R rating anymore, but yeah.
You know, I'm going to go out on this limb, though. I do like Sterling K. Brown in this. I was a This Is Us fan going into this, and watching this movie and seeing him chew up the scenery like he's chewing this gum, I had fun with him.
I like him in it, but I don't like that he's just here to explain shit.
There's a few people I like in this movie, and Sterling K. Brown is definitely one of them.
I mean, there's a lot of, speaking of Marvel, there's a lot of Marvel connections in this movie.
A lot.
Well,
you got Boyd Holbrook, you got Olivia Munn, you got... Thomas Jane.
Yeah. So I didn't even recognize for the first hour of this film. I didn't even know that was Thomas Jane until I took a closer look. Oh shit, that is Thomas Jane.
Well, because I don't know what happened in his life, but he has not aged well.
No, he has not.
You know, yeah, you have Sterling K. Brown was in Black Panther. I mean, we got one of the John Wick guys in this movie.
Yep.
So everything's kind of connecting.
We see Quinn show up to a bar saying that he needs help and he has money. He turns on the Predator camouflage and tells the guy running the bar to mail the stuff that the address shown as he shoots the camouflage ball down his throat using a shot glass and tequila.
And this is the first time Adam has stopped the movie. The first time I stopped watching it, this is where I stopped.
What the fuck? There's no logic to this.
How is he no... Because when he spooks this guy, he's already got the camo activated.
Yes!
So somehow he knows what this little freaking Benoit ball does that's in his hand. And then he thinks that's smart enough. And then he gives this guy, "Hey, mail this for me." Sure, I can trust this guy down here in Central America, or in nondescript Mexican country. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? And then he just swallows it. Let's guess if this isn't going to be Chekhov's colon later on down the road.
Well, it's also convenient that he does this right before he gets captured.
Guess what? You could walk out of there camouflaged because you just did it.
Yeah, and this is also the thing where, like, the movie's inconsistent with people. Some people know how to work the Predator technology even though they've never seen it before. And then other points, people are naturally, like, confused by what they do.
I love the fact that Adam, the big Predator fan, turned this off about 10 minutes in.
This also reminds me of, it's kind of like the I need your clothes and your boots from Terminator 2.
Yeah. We cut to Quinn's son, Rory, playing a game as some kids really fuck with him by turning on an alarm.
Oh, this fucking kid. So my comments are not going to be towards Jacob Tremblay, because I think he, for a kid this young at the time, like, he's got amazing talent.
Yeah, he does.
And we've, like, it goes all the way back to Room, Dr. Sleep. Like, I think, I hope he continues on this trajectory now that he's not a kid anymore. But, you know, I think he plays autism very authentically. I just don't think the movie, it's kind of offensive with how it not only kind of comments on mental illness in general, because it's not just autism. You have Tourette's, you have PTSD. The movie almost has a very Michael Bay-esque type of juvenile thought on treating mental illness as just, oh, man up and be tough. Now, that would work if you're if you're kind of making this the opposite of the first Predator, where that those guys are like macho to a fault. And, you know, those are the kind of people who would just tell you to man up. But there's no satire in this movie. It treats all the guys as like this ragtag group of lovable oafs, even though most of them are pretty despicable. And it treats autism, and this is not me projecting, it is literally a superpower.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
To the point, yeah, which we'll talk about later. So I find it offensive and in a lot of ways misguided. Maybe if this thing didn't get fucked with as much as it did, there would have been an actual like through line with it. But as it is, you know, I totally understand why there was the backlash towards that, because it's not handled well.
Was there a backlash? I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah.
Not to the level of people going against Tropic Thunder as an example. Like, that was real, like, protests. But there was a lot of, you know, special needs advocates that went after the people behind this.
Man, I had forgotten. I think one of the things, too, because it did hurt the film, because I remember ahead of time people going, oh, the world is saved because of autism. And this was a time where there was, Jenny McCarthy was still doing her rant on vaccines, that cunt, and how much it hurt, you know, before she got schooled. So it really didn't do any favors. On one hand, I appreciate, and I do think there's something he's trying to tell with trauma, with PTSD, with autism. And I wish he did that better, because the way that it's done is really bad across the board with all of them. That at some point, some of this trauma and PTSD we get with the, I call them the shitty six, because they're not the Magnificent Seven. That trauma is gone when it needs to just disappear, including somebody's Tourette's that just disappears. Mm. So this could have been done in a way that I think would have been really effective, but it's not. And using Asperger's, which is a type of autism, but it's kind of got extreme other realms that isn't on the spectrum part of it. He's confused. It's like he fucking Googled it and didn't even use Wikipedia, but went into Reddit to find what he wanted to about autism, and that's how he wrote it into a script. And it's a shame. And this teacher is the worst fucking teacher, as it flees the room with a bunch of kids with a fire alarm going off while your autistic kid who can't handle sounds and loud noises is crouching in a corner, hiding his, you know, covering his ears. But yeah, it's a shame, because it could have been done well, and it's done about as bad as you can do.
It's also strange. Well, the movie sort of puts all of neurodivergency as like a universal thing, when in reality, it's a huge spectrum. Like, that covers almost everything that's associated with abnormal or irregular brain behavior, which autism falls into. But it's also weird because Shane Black did PTSD in Iron Man 3. Like, yeah. Like, that was the whole crux of that movie. And, you know, me personally, I think it's handled very well. Here, it's the opposite. So I don't know what if Shane Black was having like a midlife crisis. But for his two big studio movies to have that as a huge, like, focal point, I find to be very odd. And opposite ends of the spectrum as far as how they're depicted. And both movies, like, now this is a Black thing, having the kids in his movies, it's not handled well, though. Because, like, the daughter and the nice guy, she's not on the spectrum or anything, but she's clearly smarter than her father, or at least more mature. There's the kid in Iron Man 3, Last Action Hero. I know he didn't direct it, but he wrote it.
That, yeah.
He wrote it, and that's a kid I would punch in the face, for the record. Like I feel like Woody Harrelson in Zombieland, where he's like, hey, I've never hit a kid before. But I would have dropkicked that kid into, like Arnold into Kingdom Come. You know, it would have been like, you want to be a farmer, here's a couple of acres line.
So the kids approach him, and he's just shaking, and Rory falls as they leave. Rory then puts the chest
piece. Like the scene too, because it's like the world where everyone's just a bully.
Yeah. Rory puts the chess pieces back on the board before leaving. Rory is then barked at by the dog as he enters his house, And we see that a package has been sent to Quinn's house, and Rory, has been sent to this house, which used to be Quinn's house, and Rory tells the mailman that he kills people, and the box is left. So Quinn does not have a P.O. box anymore, so they just deliver it to his former house. That's how this went.
If you stop paying your P.O. box, they don't deliver it to your address.
That was my next question. Yeah.
Second time Adam turned off the film.
I was going to say, someone should have called Newman and asked, like, hey, is this actual, like, proper?
We cut to Olivia Munn's character of Casey being dragged away. She shows photographs of the Predator, and at least Black keeps two in canon by telling us that in addition to being here in 87, they were also here in 97. We see Rory getting Halloween costume options of either a pirate or Frankenstein. Nice little callback to Decker's Monster Squad days.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Well, also, I do like that this movie, it's not doing the Superman Returns thing of like ignoring the bad movies. They reference all the other ones to some degree.
He says that the guys will still be able to see that it's him, so he doesn't really want to go out. We go back to Quinn, who's being questioned and even given a lie detector test, and he's told that they need to know if he poses a threat, and he says he feels like a stranger on his own planet.
There's a stranger in this movie because he's the only one who's devoid of any personality. This is a huge miscast.
I thought about that. But I got to ask you, Matt, would Del Toro have been better in this?
Well, it depends. Like, would he have... I think yes by default to answer the question. But I get the sense that he wanted the lead to be as close to a straight man as possible. Like, you know, he wanted to be Murtaugh. Because this movie, basically, like, all of the guys are basically, like, Riggs level of Disturbed. Or unhinged. So I get you want that contrast, but it's too far on the other side where he is like vanilla ice cream level of bland.
Yeah, let's get to that. I want to get to my crux of this movie. The series, actually. The big problem with this series, guys, see if you agree with me, is the fact that it peaked way too early. We go back to Aliens last year. Yeah, that first Alien film, I called it a perfect film. I gave it a 10. I feel like it's perfect in every way. But what made that series a franchise was James Cameron's next film, which gave it more depth. Predator didn't have that. Predator had Predator 2, which built on it and did some stuff with the weaponry, but that's about it. Danny Glover, as I mentioned, he gave his all, but he was not Arnold material. Adrian Brody, we talked about him last week. God forbid. Thank God Shane Black didn't bring him back in any way, but he wasn't that good of a leading man. This series peaked way too early, and you bring Boyd Holbrook here to what? Try to be a smaller Arnold and be the straight man in the whole series of guys? Like, it doesn't gel with me.
Well, it also shows that Arnold is really one of the unsung heroes of that first movie. Sometimes I think it's very easy to take him for granted, but they haven't been able to recapture a lead with that level of screen presence. It's not forgetting, like, you know, you got good actors like Danny Glover and Adrian Brody. And I've seen Boyd Holbrook be good, but it's only when he plays villains. Logan and the Sandman. I like him in both of those. But he's also got the problem where he's trying to do an American accent. Parts where he sounds like Benedict Cumberbatch when he first played Doctor Strange, where it's very clear he's doing everything he can to sound just monotone and like white guy 101. He certainly got better the more he played him, but it clearly shows here. And yeah, to your point, this movie doesn't have an Aliens or a Terminator 2 where they showed, oh, you can do something with this franchise that's as good in most people's opinions. They've been trying to recapture that magic ever since. It's kind of it is kind of like Jaws in that way. But at least with Predator 2, they didn't just make the same movie.
Well, that's true. Adam, as the fan of this series, would you agree this thing just peaked too early and they've been trying to recapture it since?
Yes, and I think you have to think of it almost like the Terminator franchise in that way. How's that franchise done without Arnold? You know,
or without James Cameron.
Yeah. Or without James Cameron. Like, you got middling return. That's not to say they're all bad, but they're not great. You know, there's some aspects of all the movies that are worthy parts of the mythos and the story. But to take away what Arnold and that initial team did is you're missing a big part of that movie. I mean, there's a reason there's not Commando 2 Electric Boogaloo. You know, you're not doing Commando with somebody else. I mean, shit, how many Conan movies have we had? Mm-hmm. Arnold is a presence, especially in the 80s, that has not been duplicated by anybody. Dwayne, go bleep yourself. So there's definitely something to that. But you have people in this movie that I think would have been a better protagonist than Boyd Holbrook. Much like Matt, I think he's amazing in Logan. I think he's fantastic in Sandman. But I would almost rather have Thomas Jane be like, I was on that chopper to come in to help rescue Dutch. And he's dealing with trauma from that. And you could have something there. Shoot, Javonte Rhodes, who plays Nebraska, who we meet here in a little bit. I like him.
I do,
and what he gives in this way more than I do Boyd Holbrook. I just think he's not the right person for this, you know? And if you're going to give me an American sniper, give me a fucking American, not somebody doing a bad American accent, because that just drives me nuts.
When you said that, I thought you were going to say, give me Bradley Cooper.
Shoot, Yvonne Strahovski kicks ass in Handmaid's Tale. Let her be the lead of this for all that it matters.
Yeah, I forgot she was in this. We cut to Roy.
So does the film.
We cut to Roy opening the package and seeing the Predator helmet as well as the glove. He picks the sight off the glove and we see it sort of start up around him. Meanwhile, Quinn is taken to the bus and it's now Con Air mixed with Predator, boys.
Well, I was going to say it's kind of like Dirty Dozen where they're all kind of...
Okay. We can go with that, I guess.
Yeah, but it's got that man on a mission type of component. It's also very aliens because they're Marines.
Yep.
All of these guys deliver cute lines as he's welcomed to Group 2 by Nebraska Williams, a.k.a. Gaylord. Nebraska introduces Coyle, Lynch, Nettles, and Baxley, who I guess Shane Black wrote to have turrets because Shane Black himself has turrets. Another.
I've heard that, but I have interacted with people who have turrets. And that... Much like autism, there's a very massive spectrum on how it affects and into what way. So, of course, he goes the extreme with Baxley. I've never seen or had anybody verify that Black has Tourette's other than Shane Black saying, oh, that's why I did this, because I have it. And it almost seems like a cop-out.
Yeah, I don't know, because like I'm sure he has some degree of tics, but this is the Tourette's that South Park made fun of when Cartman pretends to have it. And this is where also you can tell Shane Black's heart lies with these type of misfit characters. He doesn't give two fucks about the main character at all, to the point where I'm like, okay, why didn't you just make them the subject? What, did you include him just because you didn't want to make this just a straight remake of Predator? And the last movie was about a bunch of renegades like having to come together, so he felt like he had to do something different out of obligation. But at the same time, it's cherry picking from other properties. You know, I mentioned Aliens. You know, you could even tie back to the first Predator if you want. I mean, yeah. I like that. I like the performances because, like, I'm not a Thomas Jane guy. We'll talk about this with the Punisher. I don't understand what people saw in him for the longest of time, but I think he's fine. I like that they named him after the stunt coordinator of the first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Keegan Michael Key, I'm sort of hit or miss on. Some things I like him in, sometimes I think he's grating. I think he's tolerable here. But the Trevante Rhodes is the standout. I think of all, you know, I've liked that guy ever since Moonlight.
But I think all of them give quite different performances throughout this. Like they're bring back for reshoots and they play it a little differently. Not that they evolve, not that their character develops, but just that they are literally playing it either a little heightened or a little restrained as we go through this. I don't feel like they're consistent in the way they're playing it.
Well, we're going to get to this in a couple years, but I just rewatched The Mist last week. I think that is a near perfect movie, except for the casting of Thomas Jane.
I was going to say, I thought you, yeah, don't defend him.
No, no. Except for that casting. I thought it was a near perfect film. So Nebraska says he ended up on the bus because he put a bullet in the CO. We hear the Predator theme echo as the helicopter lands in snow, and we see Casey being introduced to Keys, Jake Busey. Nice little reference here as Casey is finally catching on why she was brought here.
It popped with that original OG theme.
Yeah.
Blasting, though. It just, like, yep. Yep.
Henry Jackman, I've talked about him in the past. I think he's a wonderful composer. He does really good things with the themes here, as opposed to John Debney last week, who just kind of put it on when he put it on, and when his new themes kicked on, it was really bland.
We've done like 5 Henry Jackman movies.
Yep, we have. Casey looks down and sees a Predator on the table, like how aliens lay humans down in those alien abduction videos from the 90s. Adam, remember those?
Yeah,
I was half expecting an anal probe.
Right.
With this script, I'm not surprised.
She gets cleaned up and she asks why they call the alien the Predator. She's told the answer, as well as the fact that they found his escape pod in Mexico. So at least they answer the question, why is he the Predator, not the Hunter?
Yeah,
but was it necessary to include the goddamn motherfucker line again, this time with beautiful? Fuck.
She's written as a scientist for freaking every bit of science, you know, that needs to be. Like, she's deus ex scientist throughout this freaking thing. And, okay, you want to bring back that line? Fine, I get it. You drop it a little too early. But I fuck. To try that you're going to have this, like, drunk bar discussion about it's not a predator, man. He's more of like a sportsman dude, like going fishing, right? Like, this is some stupid shit. This is something you have a discussion with your buddies. You don't write it into your film.
I have to challenge you on that, because you're criticizing this, but yet you love Kevin Smith doing that in his movies.
Not part of that dialogue, though. That's... This isn't, well, I want to say this isn't a comedy, but it sure as hell isn't an action movie at this point.
No. So they show her the tests, and they show that the specimen has human DNA. She gets it, and they want to know if it fucked a human. We cut to Coyle.
About Kevin Smith dialogue.
Yeah, no shit.
They cut, well, the Predator, I'm sure, has a condom in his tech, in his Bond lab.
So they cut to Coyle, who tells a circumcision joke I used to tell in third grade. And I guess we are getting to know these guys as Quinn expresses how much he hates being in Group 2.
Group 1 and Group 2 must have been the test audiences, because I feel like they watched two different movies.
We see another Predator ship approach Earth, as it is Rory who calls it. The Predator starts appearing on military radars as Casey asks more questions. The ship heads down and is within 200 miles as the Predator wakes up. It actually uses its jaws to bite, which I found interesting, as it gets up and a fight ensues.
I thought that was actually creative, because I've never seen a Predator do that. Like, you've never seen him do that, which you think he would given the mandibles.
Uh-huh. Casey runs away and gets out of her suit as she sees Red Splatter, the window beside her. She crouches down, but it's not enough to hide from him as he finds her. But he ends up leaving and taking out dudes who aren't naked and have guns. Adam, you being the Predator fan, was this a callback to the first film where if you're cold, they can't see you? Why is she hiding naked here?
Because in the trailer, they could have made it seem like you were going to see Olivia Munn naked and try to get some extra people into the theater, because that's what they showed in the trailer, and you thought you were going to get that. No, it's, I mean, she doesn't have a weapon, so that's why it doesn't attack. But this
She's got two of them on her chest.
This escape is, I mean, the studio must have said, hey, can we get some damn action in your action movie, please? But it suddenly its hands work like its metal claws, because it literally just completely rips faces off, and it uses a voice imprint to open a door, but it doesn't have its equipment. But then in the next shot, it uses its hands to open a door. It has vision without its helmet and mask. It's doing voices. I am pissed at just the incontent, the un... just the refusal to hold to what any of the shit has mattered beforehand. Like, this is just randomness gone amok in this escape. It's, I'm glad to see some action until I see the Predator pick up a gun and fire it and do it in a weird ass wavy motion that it's just, I, third time I turn off this film. Because when the Predator picks up a rifle and just, like, waves it across its chest, firing bullets to kill people, I just fuck this film.
So, I can't get that upset, because one of the problems with this property as a franchise is I don't know what the Predator can do versus can't do with his technology, because it changes from movie to movie. So, I think that's a... I know this is Fox, but that is a universal problem with all of these movies.
Meanwhile, Rory's helmet turns on as the Predator at the lab has put the other one on to see where the other Predator is. We see the bus.
Oh my god, okay, so this is a problem because of what we find out later on down the road of what the first Predator is here for, what the second Predator is here for. They both know about Earth. Everything has to do about Earth and humans. Why does this dude show up so much later other than convenience? And why do we need Rory to put on a god dang freaking power glove from the wizard to call this thing to Earth? Oh my...
Matt, am I the only one who loves Red Adam?
No, I want to just, like, sit, turn my mic off and just listen.
I know.
Because, like, my thoughts of this movie are not all that groundbreaking, but at the same time, like, I sort of knew walking into this what I was in for, so I couldn't bring myself to get mad, because I also had no expectations. Like, but I can see, like, if you're a Predator fan, this could just blow your mind like Scanners.
We see the bus stop as the driver is told there has been a breach. We see Casey running around with a gun as she approaches Keys. The bus sees the Predator descend, and Quinn knows what it is. Quinn says that they need to get off the bus and move out. Coyle then tells a couple of other bad Hawkins jokes as Baxley has finally had enough and grabs him by the throat. They make it out of the bus as we see Casey run outside and cross a bridge. Nebraska, meanwhile, takes control of the bus as the Predator watches the ships fly overhead. He and Casey run across the scaffold. Why is she running across the scaffold?
So... Everything with Casey, I feel like Shane Black was swapped out for Michael Bay because she's shot in the way that Bay not only shoots women, but she's written the way Bay depicts women, where they're there just to be made fun of, belittled. And she is about as believable as a scientist, though, as Denise Richards was.
I was going to make that comparison, too, actually. Well, I was going to ask you guys, which one's worse, Denise Richards or Olivia Munn as a scientist?
I think Munn can at least say the dialogue when it comes to the sciencey stuff. It is horrible dialogue, but she can at least say the words.
So Casey's running across the scaffold as it jumps across, and she jumps on the bus. They fire at the predator as she fires a dart in the foot, and she jumps down.
Just found my 1 week spot.
Just as
I was fighting the predator, and then I took a dart to the foot.
Just as the "get to the chopper" line is uttered.
Oh my bleep you!
Is that the fourth time?
Is this the fourth time?
Nope.
Oh.
Nope.
Oh,
wow. Nope. But I can't, I understand the want to have the laugh in there. And if I was, I think if it was different up to this point, you could do it. Because yeah, go full blown wink and nods. But this thing needs to be a Jaws 4 level of spoof, and it's not. Ah, god dang. If you had Keys say it, maybe I would have enjoyed it a little more. Because Jake Busey is in here, and I gotta say, the best stunt casting you could possibly do is having Jake Busey play the son of Gary Busey. I have wanted that my entire life. This film at least gives me that.
They're told to eliminate Casey as Quinn puts her on his motorcycle. And we see the predator attack another truck and then grab a hand to do a thumbs up sign. What the fuck?
This.
That's like Val Kilmer in Batman Forever when he gives the thumbs up.
I thought of Batman Forever too. This is so stupid. Why?
Does the predator know
the thumbs up sign?
A couple things. The dude driving this bus or van, whatever the heck it is, it's a clear window that he's not looking back to see that this predator just slaughtered everybody. It takes an arm. This is the moment that I swore I was never, ever going to go back and watch this film. I've never gotten past this moment. I think this is the stupidest thing that Shane Black has ever written, and that is saying something. Like, this is one of the most, I cannot believe. I can't believe Fox didn't say, you know what, we are just not releasing this movie. Just scrap the whole thing. Just Batgirl freaking David Zaslav this thing. Because dude taking an arm, doing a thumbs up and stick, hey, you guys. Oh, my God. Oh, this moment.
We cut to outside the truck as predators and predator dogs appear. So, Adam, at this point, this is all new to you then, right?
Everything from this point on. And I thought that I had seen like half of this movie. Right? No.
No.
That thumbs up is the 35-minute mark. Because I stopped and made a note. How far did I ever make it? 35 minutes.
That is so funny.
So everything else is new, and I can't believe. And okay, I watched other people being like, you gotta like the dogs, man. Because this is these are the dogs from Predators. No, it isn't.
No.
Those were an alien-looking creature as a throwback to that original design. These are some horrible CG monstrosity made to look. Because at some point, it's in here that the way that dogs act to people, and dogs can recognize good people, and that's why Rory and the pit bull, and that's why Olivia Munn was originally supposed to be out walking dogs, because you can recognize good people. This is bad. This is stupid. This is bad. And the explanation that a hunter brings its dog. Shit. And the fact that I know where my son with Asperger's goes when he feels safe. He goes to a ballpark. With a bunch of people and loud noise, generally, this is not where he would go.
We go inside a motel as Baxley grabs a gun and says he just feels like having a gun. As Quinn and Nebraska talk about end times and the CEO who lived when Nebraska shot him.
I like this scene in the motel. This bonding with what I keep calling the shitty six. I could have used this not the way the bus was done. I think this is a great scene for him. A good scene for him.
Well, yeah, well, this is what Shane Black does well.
Yeah.
But this also confirms the parts of the movie that he 100% made versus the ones he had no involvement in.
He then says that Quinn should probably be worried. Meanwhile, the gang surround Casey in the motel room as she wakes up and says she wishes people would stop calling her Sunshine, which is a callback to that scene that was cut out of this movie. So why would you keep that line in this movie?
Because by this point, nobody was paying attention. They just said, get it out. Continuity be damned.
Even with it never being referenced, I didn't bump into that at all.
Well, I didn't bump into the fact that she was called it. I just bumped into the fact that she said, I wish people would stop calling me that. We never saw it.
Yeah, and with so much ADR, obviously, in this film, you could have done something else.
Definitely.
Oh, God, this thing must have been a nightmare in post-production.
Yeah. She grabs a shotgun and pulls the trigger as Quinn tries pulling it away. Quinn says that she's a scientist and that she won't last a day outside. Baxley randomly says, eat your pussy. And we get some dialogue around this plot point.
This one made me laugh at least.
Wow, you're laughing now, huh? Wow.
The way that this part gets done. Okay, I used to have a customer previous life that would come in, and he had what some people would call the offensive Tourette's. You know, his language was that way. He and his wife would come in, and I would deal with them because I felt comfortable dealing with them, and I'd help them out the entire time. So this kind of outburst wasn't new, but the way that everybody's trying to act like he's not. Oh no, he said. Just, you know why? Because I think of I think of Richie and Quentin Tarantino. If you want me, I will.
I will. Another one we saw in theaters. She finds a made-up unicorn and is told that the benefit of staying with them is that she stays alive. Casey says that she's a biologist and they have her on call in case they have alien contact.
That's not what a biologist does.
I know.
No.
She then reiterates what the hunter, I mean predator, actually is.
Quinn, we don't know.
Yeah,
so we might as exactly. Well try to break it down.
Uh-huh. Quinn admits that he took his gear and he knows where it's going. So this is all about a mailed package, I guess. So weird.
I mean, literally,
yeah. Mail package. We cut to Rory putting on the mask as he sees some distorted predator imagery. Quinn gets to the house and we learn from Emily that this isn't his house anymore. Rory is not there as he's out looking for video games, as she says, and this, of course, throws Quinn in a tizzy. Quinn introduces the Loonies to Emily, as they're now his new unit. So, Adam, you like all this stuff with his wife, huh?
No, didn't say that.
Well, you like the actress.
I think she's a good actress. I think she could have been used a little better in this. She's believable. She's actually giving a performance, and yeah, I think she's fine.
Swap her and Emily Munn, and I'm kind of with this film.
Yeah. I agree.
Well, this is also like the exact beat and scene recreation of Riggs having dinner with Murtaugh's family.
But also don't understand why Rory putting on a freaking helmet gives him vision of an alien species.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, because it's the entity.
Oh, God. Why do you keep bringing that movie up?
And apparently it fits the head of a 10-year-old child, not some space alien with freaking mandibles.
He also tells her that something is out there that's a space alien and not something from a Bible. She grabs a gun and says that she's coming with them, and the group debates why she shouldn't. Nebraska asks Emily about her husband, and she tells him that he was a sniper and he has 13 confirmed kills. He's a lousy husband, but a very good soldier. Nettles is upset that Nebraska called him a pussy. Baxley and Lurch, they try staying, but they're dragged along.
This is part of the problem with the Loonies, too. We should have lost at least two of them by now.
Absolutely, yeah.
That everybody is sticking around till the third act of this film is problematic.
Well, it's also the number six, because isn't that the amount of how big the mercenary team was in the original? You got Dutch, yeah. Bill Duke, Jesse Ventura, Billy, Hawkins, and Poncho.
Yeah, but they started killing them off by the 30-minute mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quinn tells Casey that he wants to find his son and tells her that she's with him.
You can't say that without me thinking of Harrison, Mel Gibson yelling, "Give me back my son!"
Well, Shane Black didn't write a Christmas movie here. He wrote a Halloween movie, as we see some trick-or-treaters fuck with Rory, who has the Predator
gear. Yeah, that's like an E.T. homage.
As the soldier cannon takes out a bully and a house. Not bad.
What the hell? So this, oh my, I rewound this like 3 or 4 times so I could understand what just happened.
Yeah.
So this bully, the stoner lives at 420. But all he does is like hit him in the back with a piece of candy and this helmet, which I guess the predator doesn't need to actually be a predator anymore because the helmet does all the work. Just has got a laser attached that blows this kid apart and explodes the house. And Rory's going to walk away like he's Tony Stark and Iron Man. Just,
This is what happened after Harley was left all that equipment that Tony left him in Iron Man 3. He went postal and killed all his bullies.
Oh,
I don't know who terrorized Shane Black as a kid, but he's got a Stephen King level thing against bullies.
He really does.
Yeah.
He then drops the helmet. They get some action on the police scanner as Rory's blast has them en route. Rory tames the dog as he's approached by predator dogs, but it's Quinn and his friends to the rescue as they show up and do exactly that.
Why do the dogs have dreadlocks?
they were listening to a lot of reggae.
Quinn's chase.
Well, I mean, look, you know, they could have called them Bob Marley and me.
Quinn's chased to the bleachers, but one blast takes the dog out in all its green-blooded glory, and the others are taken out as well. Quinn reaches Rory as they provide Casey with a sample, but another predator approaches and holds up Nettles, but Baxley isn't putting his gun down and he fires at this predator. So should I just call this upgrade because this is 11 foot?
All the super predator?
Yeah. So confusing.
Jason X Predator?
Like, I know Predators did this too, but...
Yeah, but this takes it to such... This is Jason walking out.
Yes.
In Jason X. Like, mm-hmm. That's what this thing looks like. We just got the dogs. We got Nebraska coming up and shooting a dog in the head, and the dog walks away because we need to keep that dog for later. Mm. God damn it. But this... I got no problem with one being bigger than another. Obviously, we, you know, established that the last film. This thing comes up. This is like a Garrett and Jen level of size difference between these two. This upgrade is like the other predator comes up to his hip.
Well, yeah, this is like when they had Kane tag teaming with X-Pac.
Jesus. Casey and Quinn take Rory into the school as the predator grabs Rory, but the predator is pulled through the window and another one approaches. This super predator, aka Super Freddy, is what I call them.
Or Uber Predator.
Uber Predator. The two battle it out as Uber Predator pulls the other spine right out from its body.
Okay, badass shot.
I agree.
Was not expecting that whatsoever. But at this point, this movie is AVPR.
I got a lot of AVP flashbacks watching this.
Yep.
Well, I got a lot of this. This becomes Mortal Kombat because around this time, the Predator was a playable character.
Was he?
In Mortal Kombat X, you can play as the Predator, you can play as a Xenomorph.
Wow. Casey asks if they're hunting each other now. The Predator then communicates that there are several human targets. They determine that the new Predator is 11 feet and will say that he thinks this Predator went rogue and he wants the ship that he came in on. Quinn doesn't like the R word and Nebraska is keeping Rory company. Well, at least somebody calls that out. Jesus. Nebraska tells Rory that the difference between being a killer and a soldier is that a killer enjoys killing. Again, like this Nebraska character is pretty awesome. I wish he was the lead.
No, and it's, I wish some of the other one, I don't want any of them to go, but we need to thin them out. Like there's a character who dies at the end of this film that I forgot was part of this team.
Mm-hmm. I know I figured exactly we all who you're did talking it as about. Well. Yeah.
Yep. Like thin some of these guys out, and especially being that you had to reshoot so much of the ending, just find a way to kill some of these guys off. You've already got some really shitty, have one of these absolute just crappy demon dogs from Ghostbusters kill one of these guys here. That's what these are. They're the Keymaster, but with dreadlocks.
I was going to say, they look like Resident Evil lickers.
Oh, that's a good call, too. Nebraska tells Rory that they are not getting killed. Nettles starts hitting on Casey as she concludes that they're out to upgrade themselves. All right, so this I had a major problem with. She says they take the spines of the strongest beings they've killed because they are trying to evolve. How great was it? And we talked about it in that first film. That these predators, they came down here to pretty much hunt the way a father and son goes to a forest to hunt deer. But now, I don't know what it is about these studios. They have to have a fucking reason for these guys to come around and kill. They are saying they are killing because they are trying to drink the spinal fluid and evolve from that. Fuck this. I hate this.
Well, this is the problem of having to expand the lore out of obligation to justify making sequels. Nothing can ever just be straightforward. I mean, that was in a lot of ways, that was the falling of the Prometheus and Alien Covenant movies to a certain degree, was explaining how certain things came to be. But this is, not only is it too much of a stretch, at least for me, it retroactively makes them look dumber in the previous movies that they wanted to evolve from Bill Paxton.
I would have shut this off again if it wasn't for us doing this.
This thing's been turned off more times than a televangelist.
I not only do I find that this is kind of insulting to all the movies that were written before, but it doesn't make sense. If you think that we are the premium being that they can upgrade themselves to, this is televangelist level of arrogance that you think we are the superior beings in the universe for an upgrade. Like, that's just stupid. On top of it, when you rip out a spinal cord, it doesn't keep spinal juices inside. That's not how a spinal column works. It's not a slurpee. Oh, and then of course they got to tie into, well, because of global warming, we've only got a generation left, but they can come here and survive on global. This angers me so much. So much.
Well, the global warming thing also doesn't make any sense because the first movie takes place in the fucking jungle.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Though we missed one thing, and it's because I think I've got more notes for this than any film I've done. Did you notice the name of the school when they run through it?
Yeah, Lawrence Hay Gordon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, you notice it because of that, and he—that's I think the stunt coordinator. Or no, he was tied to the he's producer on the film. Mm-hmm. I got that—that's Lawrence Gordon, as in this. This is where Dr. Lawrence Gordon from Saw.
Which God.
Is... Oh, God damn. But the fact that they even had to, that we have to have Casey explain that he, at least I think it's here, has an exoskeleton inside because you can't see or tell what's going on in this film. And you have to find a way to explain because the armor, all the cool shit that we've had throughout this film series, it goes by the wayside. They have predator vision with no mask, no helmet, no nothing. They can do things with just their hands that they used to have the claws and shit like. We're just going to throw that away. They can just do it just because. Oh, God.
Enraging. It pissed me off so much. I had completely forgotten about this. Again, I hadn't seen this in 7 years. And when I turned this on and that came up, I was like, oh, my God. They actually gave a reason why they kill.
Yeah. It's. But I will say, because Matt talked about this is the stupid shit they did with Prometheus and Covenant. I think he tries to tie it into that because I think we see black goo at the end of this film.
I do too. We'll get there. So Nettles approaches with a predator dog and says maybe they can use it. Casey wants to study it and tells all of them that no one shoots her fucking dog. They ask Quinn for the device that goes on the glove and then kick him down. Will tells Casey to shut the fuck up and their visits are increasing because they are trying to snatch up all the good DNA before it's gone. All the good DNA.
Too late.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Quinn's getting his ass kicked and Emily is getting impatient. The Uber Predator comes down and takes out the guys in the house as well as some furnishing. The Uber Predator looks for his partner's gear as Rory is making a map. Quinn says obviously they didn't read his file as he gets up and starts taking them out. Meanwhile, a predator dog comes in and saves Casey. Nebraska meets back up with Quinn as well as Casey and they find a helicopter to go find Rory.
Yeah, this movie just, like, you could just find helicopters on the ground like health packs in a video game.
I do say there is one line here that I could almost stand up and cheer for. Because when they're doing the explanation right before Uber Predator shows up, there's a line of, oh, you're just pulling this all out of your ass. Yeah. And I want to stand up and cheer because that's how I feel like this movie is going.
Oh. Baxley's questioning if they're going to live as they are fighting both aliens and the army. And Quinn gives a motivational speech. We see Will take Rory to the alien site, and Rory just tells him to go fuck himself.
Okay, stop.
All right.
They needed Rory, because Rory was drawing him, they needed him to let them know where this ship was. But when we get here, they have a fenced area surrounding this ship.
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss my notes because I sure as hell was not rewinding it to find out. They needed to find this ship, but when they drive there, it's in a fenced in area that they have cordoned off. So they know where the ship is, but they need Rory to go find the ship. Okay.
Yeah, this is like in Prometheus when the guys who have the map get lost.
Will says that he's been trying to figure out where they've been since 1987 as Quinn watches Rory open the door. Will says it might be a Project Stargazer, and Rory says the voice on the radio is his dad and he's about to save him, and Will responds that his dad must be the dumbest motherfucker alive, but it's actually a diversion, and Rory points out that Quinn actually killed somebody. We see soldiers outside being taken out, and as Will welcomes him back, Quinn responds, "Fuck you, I never left." Oh boy. Will plays some games with Quinn as he starts counting down, but Uber Predator shows up to interrupt the proceedings. A fight breaks out as we're seeing soldiers electrocuted. A car slips as it blasts through the gate. The Uber Predator goes to the gate and emits a translator as he sends a message saying he was sent to kill the vessel. They can't have it, but they can run. He then says that McKenna is the true leader as he's the only one who has shown true courage. He then tells them to go as the good old wrist nuclear bomb starts making its noises. Adam, I gotta get your thoughts on this.
Okay, that's not how an electric fence works, but okay. If it just needed to destroy this thing, it arrived in a ship. You can track where that other ship landed. Why wouldn't you just blow it up? Mm-hmm. But okay. That it just translates into I'm so angered by this. And it like puts it on a computer screen that just happens to be there. I'm so mad at this film. This is the stupidest shit. And then it does again. Its head is just there. Now, maybe you want to show what this thing looks like because you created a design that's a little bigger. I don't care. You have the mask for a reason that's been established. That this is just, this is uber stupid is what this is. I am so angered and I cannot believe that I fell for the pronoun game without it being the pronoun game by saying, I need McKenna. I fell for it. I can't believe, maybe it's because I'm so disinterested, but this is the this doesn't belong in, well, maybe it does belong in this series at this point, but this is as stupid as everything in AVP. This is the blue shit that it pours in the pool to dissolve. This is that level of just stupid.
Yeah, we haven't evolved from that, that's for sure. Matt, what are you feeling at this point?
I'm like Wendy Houston. I have nothing. Like, by this point, I've thrown out my hands and say, this movie doesn't know what it wants to be, because I don't think nobody stopped to say, hey, let's reconfigure this. They kept saying full steam ahead. It's like they hit the they're like the Titanic and they hit the iceberg, but rather than evacuating and going to the lifeboats, they tried to do a U-turn to see what they actually hit.
And the buyout was coming. Like, did they just have to release this, much yes. like Justice League, so somebody got their bonus?
Yes.
There is no reason you release this in theaters this way.
This fucker was rushed for that exact reason. So McKenna grabs Traeger and says, when this is over, you and I are going to dance. They go through the woods as the bomb goes off. They throw the blade, knowing it's going to come back, though they didn't know it was going to take off someone's hand.
There's one or two of these that make me laugh. Because this is inexperienced people picking up a toy, but yeah. The kid can figure out the toy. But yeah, this soldier deciding it's going to throw the, I guess now it's a boomerang, and he can't catch it coming back. It makes me laugh.
Yeah, now it's the glaive.
But this entire part is the reshot ending of the film.
Yes.
Oh yeah, from here on out, this is the mustache in Justice League.
I think it's since they got to the ship that we have.
I think so too.
More guns are going off as we're seeing the Predator vision again. Coyle starts flipping out, shooting in the air to get the Predator's attention. The Predator literally tears one in half as they all have a go at stopping the Uber Predator. Bombs go off as the Predator finds McKenna. And this ending is just dragging, boys. It's just dragging. It is somehow daytime as the ships take off. Traeger.
Okay. Well, there's a reason for this that I found out because I did a little research. So the climax of this movie was supposed to be during the day, and they said...
Which they were proud of.
Yes, and so they reshot it at night, but the studio did not want to pay to finish the daylight version.
So the daylight's from the original part, the nighttime is the reshoot, and they just go back and forth between them both.
So they just combined them. Jesus fucking Christ. Oh. Traeger and the rest make the wise choice to hang on to the plane from the outside.
Because they watched Mission Impossible.
Rory warns of a force field, which barely misses them as Eddie flies off.
This is the slowest acting shield.
I'm telling you.
Scotty is upset of how long it takes this shield to fully vest on this ship.
This thing's like that garage lifting door where you haven't changed the mechanism. So it takes forever to go up so you could pull out of the fucking driveway.
Nebraska makes the ultimate sacrifice by flying into the engine Die Hard 2 style as Quinn gets inside.
Oh, I was thinking of Randy Quaid at Independence Day.
Oh yeah, that too.
This movie's about as stupid as that.
For an intergalactic spaceship, this thing sure gets damaged pretty damn easy. This thing's, Rory might as well have made this with freaking paper products in his room. Like, Olivia Munn somehow shows up here running.
Yes.
With a shot that this ship just, it damages really freaking easily.
This ship heads for the trees as Quinn is just hanging around. It kind of lands as the Uber Predator walks through the water and starts going after Quinn. A fight ensues as Quinn gets thrown around a bit, but Casey is there to jump on his back and get thrown around. Rory,
the ship was flying. The ship was flying.
Yeah.
It crashed way the hell over there.
Yeah.
Casey gets down off this cliff, chases it, still has this gun, still has her shoes, still has her jacket, somehow catches up to where this thing crashed. Oh my God. She's not Psylocke, everybody. I mean, shit.
Well, she wasn't Psylocke even in that X-Men movie.
No. Rory chops off its arm as a dog gets thrown. And the Predator. And
can I say, I also got to say, we went from forest to a swamp.
Yeah, pretty quick. As a dog gets thrown and the Predator gets shot in the leg, Quinn asks the Predator what it is before saying, shut the fuck up and unloading into it.
This is the worst the blood has ever looked.
I agree.
On a Predator movie. In any of them, including AVP and AVPR, this is the worst that blood has ever looked. And in the first one, all they did was have a glow stick.
He grabs some belongings of his unit as he and Rory put them to rest. Okay, here we go, boys. We cut to Quinn getting greeted by Yamada, who gives the rundown on what this Predator was after. And what
you know, they wanted to say the word Yutani.
Mm-hmm, I agree. Yeah, I almost wrote that down. And then I realized, oh no, it's just Yamada. and what it has to do with the last Predator. Rory has his own desk as his gift to humankind. Is the Predator killer?
I gotta say, child labor laws.
The pod opens, and Matt, correct me if I'm wrong. You and I, when we reviewed this the first time, we thought Arnold was going to pop out of this, right?
If not Arnold, we thought it was going to be like Ripley.
Yeah.
And this is my first time seeing it, my first time getting here. I know he doesn't, but I am convinced that when this was originally done, it was done assuming they were going to get Arnold for it. Mm-hmm. Because with the words they're using, it makes sense.
And the way this pod comes up, I mean, if you watch the first Terminator 2 trailer, you have Arnold coming out of that pod that looks almost exactly like this. You know, he's
and that's a pod.
Yeah.
There was something in it. There's a body. There's a humanoid. Mm-hmm. There was something. There was no reason for some little tiny device to be in this thing. And when it's rising up, the black goo from Prometheus and Covenant is what's dripping from it.
Yep.
But that is a body-shaped pod. That is a Nostromo-style pod.
Pod opens and starts attacking other scientists and taking over their bodies. What the fuck? It falls off. As Quinn says, he hopes they have that suit in 42 long.
He's not a 42 or a long.
No. As credits roll on the Predator. Adam, what'd you think of this ending?
Guess he had a leftover design from War Machine from Iron Man 3? Because this is an Iron Man suit that this fucking jumps on this scientist. Oh my God. Of all the places I thought this was going to be, of all the ways I thought it was going to go, this wasn't it. And this is about as bad a way. I would have rather Jonesy jumped out of this freaking pod. Because I heard the rumors that Dutch makes sense. And I think you could have found a way to do that. I heard the Ripley rumors. I heard grown-up Newt was another option that you could have went. But if you're going to do that, shit, get rid of Alien 3 and bring us Hicks. This is so bad. Like, this is, oh my God. This is Fox just literally saying, do you have a design left over from Iron Man 3? This is abysmal.
Also, the balls on Fox to think this was going to get a sequel.
Yeah.
You know, they were all prepared to ask Shane Black, you want to make another one?
Scale of 1 to 10, what do we give the Predator? You know, I am tempted to save Adam for last, but just for consistency purposes, I'll go to Adam first. Adam, go ahead, sir. Unleash what will be the final time you ever have to watch any part of the Predator.
You know, I give a lot of hell to Ghostbuster fans for calling that a franchise when there's one great film. And now we've had some sequels recently because of it that I guess you could say are better. And I guess people could say that about me. Predator has got an amazing movie, and that movie's called Predator. And then it's got varying movies ever since. This is a film, I understand the impetus to make it, especially at the end of Fox's life trying to hold on to it. There's a lot of great ways to go with the Predator, and there's a lot of good ways to go with the Predator. There's a lot of so-so ways to go with the Predator. And then there's probably a lot of really bad ways to go, and every bad way possible they threw into this film. I don't know how you can make a film this bad and put it out and spend $100 million on it. This barely belongs in the Predator franchise. You've changed their impetus for coming here from the first one. You've changed the reasons that they've come back. You've changed that they're just hunters. They're not hunters. They're just trying to survive by drinking fluid. That is some stupid Farscape shit that he got away with, I guess, just doing coke and just coming up with some random stuff with some buddies. This movie is shot bad. It's written worse. It's reshot even worse than that. The continuity problems are evident throughout. By the end of this film, Thomas Jane suddenly doesn't have Tourette's anymore. I don't know why, other than he just doesn't. You know, we got a nice death actually with him and Coyle that would matter if I wasn't so angered by the end of this film. But the Predator designs are not great. The first one looks just like a tiny little nothing compared to Upgrade, who looks like Jason X. Supposedly he has exoskeleton, which isn't exo because that's not what exoskeleton fucking means. And they have to tell us that because you can't even see it. It's just an excuse for him not mattering when bullets bounce off him. This movie does such a disservice to the entire Predator franchise that I am upping my review of Predators and Predator 2 by one notch each. Those each go up one level. And I have to do that. I have to give them each 1 point more so that I can give this the 2 that it deserves. It is the piece of 2 that Quinn shat out to bring back that freaking little freaking ball that for some reason he swallowed at the beginning of this. I can't stand this film. It is offensive in any way to anybody that's liked The Predator. This is AVPR 2 bad. It really, really is. But at least that had some cool designs. This doesn't even have that. 2 on 10, never watching it again. I can't believe they recovered from this film. It is that bad.
Wow. 2 on 10 from the fan. Matt, as the Shane Black fan, what do you rate The Predator?
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? I don't know would be my... If you like asked me as I walked out of a screening, like, what did you think? My answer is I don't know, because I have no idea how this was justified good enough to be released, because it is as compromised a movie as Fantastic Four, by the same studio, no less. So clearly they did not learn their lesson. I do put a lot of the blame on Black, because some of the concepts are not fully explored, and you can't blame the studio for that with, you know, how it's depicting autism and mental illness in general, or mental deficiencies, I should say. But he owned up to it, which I have the utmost respect for. And he could have very easily said, you know, blame Fox, I did everything right. But I think he's got more class than that. I do think this is the worst thing he's directed by a substantial margin. But I also, at the same time, have to put directed in quotes, because I don't think this is 100% his vision. And goddamn, it's, as a Predator movie, if I'm looking at it as, in that lens, every inclusion they make just makes the lore all that more murky. And they were right, hunting season opened, but the target was this movie and everybody involved, because it's amazing that this came out and they said, oh yeah, we can put this in theaters. So all that being said, I can't bring myself to hate it, because I sort of went in there with my bulletproof shield on, knowing that this was going to be folly, if nothing else. And it kind of is. But I also can't say it's the worst movie in this franchise, because the AVP movies exist. I think it's better than those, because I could at least get through this. But don't take that as a stamp of quality. It's still pretty bad. So I'm going to land on a 4. I think when we first reviewed this, I gave it a 5. So I'm going to go a little bit lower in hindsight. But I'm never going to watch it again. But I'm also not going to be as harsh as Adam.
I don't think anyone can be as harsh as Adam. on this film. And I won't be as harsh either. And Matt, it's funny you say that at the end of your review, because I remember thinking the same thing. I remember at the end of the review, I was kind of a little more positive on it as well. But in watching it and leading these discussions and discussing this with you guys, I cannot believe how inept this movie is. Say what you will about Predator 2, say what you will about Predators, there was stuff added to that. Predator 2 was very, it added weaponry. So it's not like it was fantastic or anything, but Predators at least tried to do something different. This, I don't know if trying to do something different is what he was doing, or if the explaining of why the Predators are here is what he was here to do, but everything he brought to this is just bad. I don't go with the mercenaries here. As much as I like Jacob Tremblay as an actor, go back to our Dr. Sleep review. I said some tremendous things about him in that podcast, and I've rewatched Room since. He is such a good fucking little actor, and he's given shit to do here. I am at a loss for words as to how much I did not remember how bad this movie was. I'm going to go with a 3. I think this movie is shit. And I'll agree with Matt to this much. I don't think it's all Shane Black's fault. I think there are things here that were compromised, as with any Fox production. Guys, how many fucking times have we talked about a 20th Century Fox film that was compromised? It seems like every single time. And I worked for that fucking studio, and I worked on one of the most compromised productions in the history of that studio. And this seems like almost as bad as that. So yeah, this is a 3 on 10 for me. I am not going to ever go back to this. And poor Adam, if I were a fan of this franchise like Adam is, I'd be pissed that this is what was turned out. And everything from the reshot ending to things that just feel compromised as you watch it, it lands with a thud. So yeah, 3 on 10 for The Predators. Well, the three of us have discussed the Alien vs. Predator movies, and we've discussed the movie that came next too. If you go back to our actual site, percolatedmedia.net, and you do a search for Prey, we did review Prey and the Alien vs. Predator films way back when we started this gig. So we're not going to do that, although we are going to post that review later on in the week in the lead up to our next review, which is Predator Killer of Killers, an animated film I have not watched. I have no idea what to expect, boys. Adam, as the fan, what are you expecting when we get to Predator Killer of Killers next week?
I don't know. I mean, I kind of like the idea. But I felt like Alien really lent itself to an animated style because you could do some out there stuff with it. I think we're all big fans of the Spider-Verse films because you can really, you're not limited by human limitations on what it could look like. And when you're doing something sci-fi, something alien, something otherworldly, you can really go crazy with an animation style. But I don't know if I want the same vision every movie. I think Dan Trachtenberg did a decent job with Prey and really bringing some fear and the Predator back to the Predator series. So I'm hopeful, but I think we're getting a mishmash. I think that they made it into a movie when it was supposed to be a series. I think they did that kind of thing. But we'll see. I've seen the trailer. I think it looks pretty decent. We'll see what they do with it. But I think it could be a fun distraction before we get to the most current film that they've decided to put out.
All right, Matt, what say you?
Mildly excited because I think going the anthology style is a nice way to do this. And animation, it's the first time. And animation has now reached a point where people don't dismiss it right off the bat or belittle it as being not worth your time. So I don't know exactly what to expect, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, that's the same with me. As the non-Predator fan, I'm not going to say non-Predator fan, but as not as big a fan as Adam is of this particular creation, I'm excited to see what they do with it in animation, even though I'm not a huge fan of taking franchises and putting it in animation, if that makes any sense. I'm interested to see a different vision of this. We've seen Shane Black's vision. We've seen Robert Rodriguez's vision. We've seen John McTiernan's vision. We've seen Stephen Hopkins' vision. Let's see what Trachtenberg can do when he's given an animation platform to work with. So I'm curious as well.
For the record, you should put Shane Black's vision in quotes.
Okay. But yeah, and again, I'll go ahead and mention it again. Our Prey review is not on any podcast platform. Go to ProclaimMedia.net. Search for Prey. We already reviewed it. But until next week, when we get to Predator Killer of Killers, that's not a podcast. That's a sports hunter. Thank you, boys.
Why do you call it the Predator?
It's a nickname. You know, the data suggests that it tracks its prey, exploits weakness, seems to... well, enjoy it. Like a game.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast, exclusively here on Percolated Media.
Please do not touch anything.
Come back every Friday as new retrospective reviews are posted weekly on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
I'm sorry.
We're not dead yet.
What the hell are you?
If you like this retrospective review, check out our archives at percolatedmedia.net, as we have tons of franchise reviews such as the Alien film series, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, the ongoing Marvel films, films of the DC Universe featuring Superman and Batman, the Mission Impossible film series, the Jaws franchise, the Lethal Weapon films, the John Wick franchise, the Jurassic Park and Jurassic World film series, the Mad Max film series, Avatar, and so much more.
I wouldn't wish that on a broke dick dog.
Instead of complaining, maybe you should help.
A Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is produced by Garrett and Matt.
Do you think you could have found something bigger?
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is edited by Garrett.
Hey, you know what? Fuck this! This is bullshit, man! I want a gun!
Scheduling done by Matt.
This shit's something. Makes Cambodia look like Kansas.
The Three Men and a Retrospective podcast is voice narrated by Adam. Thank you. This podcast is not affiliated with any film studio or network, and all opinions expressed on the Three Men in a Retrospective podcast represents the opinions of that individual. Any similarities to any and all things associated with the films in question are strictly coincidental.
My men are not expendable.
The Three Men in a Retrospective podcast is an independently produced podcast, and it's thanks to the support of listeners like you that help keep it that way. Please like and subscribe, as well as leave a review on your favorite podcast platform of choice.
This stuff will make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaurus, just like me.
This podcast is a Percolated Media production. Copyright 2025, and any and all sound and audio clips are used for entertainment purposes only.
Billy! Billy! The other day, I was going down to my girlfriend. I said to her, "Jeez, you got a big pussy. Jeez, you got a big pussy." She said, "Why did you say that twice?" And I said, "I didn't." See, it's because of the echo.
So I was excited on that end.
His new movie will have released by the time this is out.
What is his new movie?
Play Dirty.
Oh, was that his? I didn't even know that
was his. But it's, I mean, to this day.
And then there's other parts where he's a Carrot Top level of prop comedian.
Wow.
He might as well be Gallagher smashing watermelons for parts of this movie.
Predator was just compared to Carrot Top and water and Gallagher. Oh, boy.
I've gotten through those specials.
You've gotten through a Carrot Top special?
Well, Chairman of the Board is a very special movie.
Oh, it sure is. We're hearing the Predator. And I guess we are getting to know these guys as Quinn expresses how much he hates being in Group 2. Hold on a second.
Must have been the Group 1 and Group 2 must have been the test audiences, because I feel like they watched two different movies.
Meadow, get down.
Yeah, he's got his own Predator in his recording equipment.
We see another Predator ship.
I think this is the stupidest thing that Shane Black has ever written, and that is saying something. Like, this is one of the most, I cannot believe. I can't believe Fox didn't say, you know what, we're just not releasing this movie. Just scrap the whole thing. Just Batgirl freaking David Zaslav this thing, because dude taking an arm, doing a thumbs up and stick, hey, you guys. Oh, my God. Oh, this moment.
It's funny.
This is number four.
It's funny you say that, because the two of us took double dates. We went and saw The Long Kiss Goodnight together. You think this is the stupidest thing he ever wrote?
Yes.
That movie's great.
Oh,
that movie's amazing.
Don't you dare fucking defend that movie.
Oh, that'll be on the Patreon then, so we can fight about it.
Yeah, yep. We would fight on that one. We cut to outside the truck. We go inside a motel as Backley grabs a gun again and just says, I'm sorry. As Backley grabs a gun and says, he's. But until next week, when we get to Predator Killer of Killers, that's not a podcast. That's a sports hunter. Thank you, boys. Adam, go take some blood pressure medicine, sir.
We'll do.